At the close of his two-week inspection tour of the Great Northwest, the President of the United States addresses the nation as he speaks to the Herald Tribune Forum in New York. Aboard the 10-car presidential special train parked in Cleveland, Ohio's railroad station, this is Bob Trout speaking at the close of a busy day for the presidential party. In Chicago this morning, as the massive new Outer Drive Bridge was dedicated, a million people cheered a solemn presidential speech which warned America of the spread of foreign war. Bound for his Hyde Park estate on the quiet Hudson River, the president faces the Columbia microphone for the last address of this transcontinental tour. For two solid weeks by rail and motor, the train load of correspective through some 8,000 miles of a dozen states. To feel the nation's pulse, the president has moved from Placid Farm to Ice-Cap Mountain, from forest parks to giant dams. Repeatedly in these past 14 days has he spoken out decisively on administration aim and policy, internal and foreign. Speeches made frequently in a dramatic setting, the grandeur of the West. At Oregon's sturdy Bonneville Dam, at Montana's massive Fort Peck Dam, at Washington State's gigantic Grand Coulee, great power and irrigation projects were inspected by President Roosevelt for the first time since his Northwest tour of 1934, when these enormous structures were little more than scratches in the earth. From New York State to British Columbia and back, the special train has roared through acres of cheering Americans, whose shouts have stimulated political speculation throughout the land. From Chicago's parading bands to the royal pomp and ceremony of a Canadian welcome to a good neighbor, the sound of music and the dull thud of saluting cannon have never been far distant from the speeding party. Music and cheers have accompanied us, but dominating the scene has always been the picture of the chief executive of the 48 United States carefully inspecting the changing face of a nation. And as those of you who have seen the rising stone and steel of federal projects growing up across the map well know, our country is changing its face. At many a project, the president delivered addresses of nationwide significance, outlining anew many policies of his administration, as when at Bonneville Dam in Oregon, he took a stand for wide power distribution to small users against its employment to develop overcrowded industrial centers. Or when, at Fort Peck, Montana, he defended large expenditures on public works while voicing determination to balance the budget by next year. When, at Grand Forks, Nebraska, on the homeward swing, the president said immediate and adequate farm legislation to replace the AAA thrown out by the Supreme Court is necessary, the political writers detected a probable special session of Congress in November. At one point, quoting a former associate justice of the Supreme Court, President Roosevelt reiterated his well-known ideas concerning the High Court. The last formal address of the journey came this morning in Chicago when the president scathingly attacked aggressor nations. He warned Americans that civilization itself is in peril, that geography is no help, and that isolation of America is a thing of the past. And he called upon all peace-loving lands to act united for peace. And so we come almost to the end of this presidential trip, ladies and gentlemen, and we're standing now speaking to you in the president's private car, the last car of this 10-car train, awaiting the synchronization of radio in order to bring you this final address of the trip. For tonight in Ohio, not 12 hours from New York, another presidential tour draws to an end. In 9 lighted railroad cars, quiet on the steel tracks of this Cleveland, Ohio station, sit the weary newsmen awaiting, with you in the rest of the country, the words of the man who sits in the 10th, the last car. In a moment or two, as we do stand in this railroad car with its blinds drawn down, with the spectators as usual out on the station trying to see through those closed windows, we shall introduce, as we say, this final speech of the two-week inspection tour. It's a tour which began on the 21st of September, 2 weeks ago tomorrow, and which will end at Hyde Park in Dutchess County on the quiet Hudson River at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time tomorrow morning, according to the railroad schedules. There isn't very much to do in a situation like this except just to wait and, as a matter of fact, to talk. I'm sure you're all familiar with radio technique and with radio practice long enough to realize that the second hand, the little stopwatch, is the thing we all go by, and when it hasn't clicked to its appointed time, there's nothing to do but keep talking in lieu of some other noise, some more pleasant noise, like a drum and bugle corps perhaps outside on the station, to while away the time until the last second does tick by and the feature of the evening begins. Outside, looking through those windows, those blinds pulled down closely, you can still see the people who always come at every station to watch the train go by. As a matter of fact, to those men who join a presidential trip for the first time, one of the marvels of a trip is the way the people who have never seen a president of the United States drive many hundreds of miles sometimes to stand along the tracks and perhaps catch nothing more than a glimpse of a speeding train silently and quietly going by in the night, with never a hope of catching a glimpse of the president himself. We're still standing here in Cleveland in the railroad car waiting for the critical signal and rather hesitating to get involved in too long a sentence and too long a description of this private car and this presidential special 10-car train, which perhaps you in these past 2 weeks have seen rushing through the country for fear that we will have to interrupt that long sentence at a certain point. Three more national addresses will be made by the president within the next 2 weeks, incidentally, and the first will be on October 11th when he will participate in a broadcast with the Polish ambassador. The president will be heard again on October 18th and on October 20th of this year. Those of you, as we said, who have seen the presidential special roaring by on this particular trip or on some other trip have wondered undoubtedly what a train is like inside. While we're standing here inside the train itself just waiting, it might be well to tell you, you might be interested to know that it's a perfectly ordinary train. There's no gilt in it, no gold leaf, no chromium plate, a perfectly ordinary train with standard railroad equipment. The same porters, the same conductors, the same gentlemen who conduct the presidential tours year after year are always in evidence. When you step on the train, it doesn't matter whether it's Seattle, Washington, whether it's Bonneville Dam, Oregon, Warm Springs, Georgia, you always see friendly faces, porters who know your name, and you feel right at home in whatever section of the country you might find yourself. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Mrs. Reed, Mrs. Maloney, ladies and gentlemen, to you who are attending this forum on current events, I again extend my good wishes and my congratulations on its success. I am speaking from the railroad train in Cleveland on my way home after a 2 weeks trip to the coast and back, and it is therefore natural, perhaps, that my thoughts at this moment run to travel. I do not want to detract in any way from the value of a forum when I say that no human being can possibly get a complete picture or a rounded conception of any national problem without traveling through the country and talking with people in every walk of life and in every section of the nation. The professor and the student in a university, the newspaper publisher and the reporter, the man in public life and his local constituent can and do learn greatly by much reading, much study, and much discussion, especially if the reading, the study, and the discussion cover all sides of any given question. But the result of it all is almost inevitably tinged with provincialism or narrowness if it is not supplemented by what I call field work. By field work, I mean not merely personal observation of the actual practice involving the immediate problem in the hometown, but also observation in a field that covers the entire nation. I knew a man once upon a time who, after graduation from college with a Bachelor of Arts degree, kept right on in the university by taking a degree in science and a degree in law and a degree in medicine, and on top of that, several graduate degrees in other subjects. When I knew him, he was 45 years old and he was still at the university. He'd been there for more than a quarter of a century. He was a walking encyclopedia, but had never been outside of his hometown. And he was about the most bigoted, narrow-minded, unsophisticated, and generally impossible person I've ever met. It is unfortunately true that in respect to public affairs and national problems, the excellently educated man and woman form the least worthwhile opinions for the simple reason that they have enough education to make them think that they know it all, whereas actually their point of view is based on association with others who, in their geographical outlook at least, are about 1 inch wide. That is why, in the utmost good humor, I hope that in the days to come our educated and thoughtful citizens will make more special efforts to know their own country better. A distinguished editor of the Tribune once suggested that young men should go west. I would amend this by suggesting that men and women, young and old, should go not only west,
to the west of Horace Greeley, but all the way to the coast, and should go south and north and east as well. And in that travels, may I repeat a suggestion that I once gave to a young man in New York who thought he knew it all. I said, take a second-hand car, put on a flannel shirt, drive out to the coast by the northern route and come back by the southern route. Don't stop anywhere where you have to pay more than $2 for your room and bath. Don't talk to your banking friends or your Chamber of Commerce friends. You know plenty of them. But specialize on the gasoline station man, the small restaurant keeper, the farmers you meet by the wayside, and your fellow automobile travelers. The Forum for Current Events is a grand institution. We ought to have more of them, but they ought to be supplemented by an intensive drive to get people round the country, get people to know their own country better. Because it's a grand country, and we can all be proud of it.
With these words, the smiling President of the United States ends his final address of this transcontinental inspection trip, which is over in Hyde Park, New York, tomorrow. Speaking from his car on a presidential special train parked in the railroad station of Cleveland, Ohio, the President has discussed the importance to Americans of traveling throughout the nation to broaden their outlook. So ends 1937's presidential coast-to-coast tour. This is Bob Trout speaking and returning you to our New York studios.
We present the Columbia Symphony Orchestra playing the Aragonés from Massenet's Le Cid. Columbia Broadcasting System.